you have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was all right. It was pretty hectic. Saw some family, moved around a bit, chilled out.
Nice.
It was decent. Yours?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Did like one night of travel and the rest was at home. And yeah, it was good year. Then New Year's Eve, I didn't do anything at all special. It was like home with the kids and we all went to bed before midnight. So, but it was kind of neat seeing everyone with their Apple Watches on New Year's Day. See, a lot of people saw for the first time the fireworks animation over your screen that they did. I think was it last year when it was the first year or so?
Yeah, it was last year the first time.
Yeah, so obviously, like anyone who missed it then or you know has a watch for the first time now gets to see it for the first time. And it was kind of neat, like seeing people from around the world. The first one I saw was like on New Year's Eve day in the US, and so it was someone in Asia. And they just tweeted it, and it was like in one of my tweet deck columns that I watch, and it didn't like translate what they said. I just like retweeted it with a comment of like Happy New Year, and then they replied with like all emojis. It's kind of neat, like crossing languages and emojis were there.
Yeah, someone must have been like confused about it because I have on my personal YouTube channel a video of the when because I'd put it in the post when I did it last year of this is the New Year's thing. Mm-hmm. And someone commented on the video, which is like over a year old at this point, and it was just like, when does it go away? because it, as well as it showing once when you like wake your screen up, you can make it happen again when you pull down the notification center and it says Happy New Year.
Yeah,
but that tile is actually quite big, so if you and you can't clear it until just the day changes. So
that's right.
It just kind of sits there, gets in the way for the rest of the day after you've seen it like once or twice.
Yeah. And I think there was also confusion around like it when it shows up because people, you know, naturally were showing it at midnight in their location. And so I saw a few people say, oh, now I've got to stay up to see this or I missed it maybe next year. It's like, no, there's a big tile. You just got to pull it down. Speaking of the Apple Watch, we begin this year with it's actually a story that happened on New Year's Eve. But it's a story about this year, which is about a new version of the Apple Watch that could be coming soon this spring. Not a new series, but a new color for, I assume, Series 5, something for product red. And this was found in some database with the idea that it could come in the early part of this year. So what's your take on this story?
Right, so previously, has Apple done red watches at all, product red or otherwise?
They've done bands, and sometimes they were seasonal, and sometimes they're always out. Now they're always out, and they've done at least three product red bands for a sport band and then two different sport loop versions. They've done cases for iPhones and iPads, and they've done actual iPhones and you know, that's kind of the extent of it. This would be the first time they've done a new color for the watch since they, you know, not counting titanium colors, since they made new gold out of rose gold and gold. And then that was the only time they did a new color besides silver and space gray from the launch was now we're going to do gold and rose gold. So they've not done a red actual watch yet.
Right, yeah, because I just looked it up. Because what I was thinking of was the... Do you remember the first watch? They did Chinese New Year special edition ones for China.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also red bands only. That wasn't the actual watch.
They were silver and they were red bands only. And I don't know if you could buy a red band yet. Or maybe you could, but it was not that configuration.
Well, and when it's sold in China, it doesn't have the product red, like charity association with it because of
politics, right?
Culture or whatever. Yeah. So it was only ever just like the red band on its own. So this would be the first time they've actually done the chassis in red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
this comes from Watch Generation, which was the first to have the story. And they do a mock-up of, you know, I guess their visual depiction of what it could look like. And, you know, it's kind of a salmon color. It's kind of a weird color that they do in the mock-up, which I think is just their take on it. But there's our good friend on Twitter, at Johnny Ive Parody, did a really good mock-up of what it would look like if it was like a deep red.
Yeah, matching... that looks more like what like the product red iPhone 8 looks like.
Exactly, yeah, or the 10R or the 11.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some cool things about what he did in this. For one, if you have a red crown, you can't have a red ring for cellular, you know? Maybe you do, it's just a different tone. But the thing I like about this especially is that the pen also matches on his idea. You know, Gordon, again, we have no idea what they actually do if this happens, but I like that he considered the pen of the buckle on the band, because that matching would be, you know, to me, like one of those very exclusive but minor things to add to the collection. I would really want one just because of, you know, it's that limited edition, you know, feel to it. And then just like aesthetically, I don't think colored watches are a bad idea. I've been saying that for a while, especially in my like series 4 review, I think I mentioned it, that I think that where you go next, now that the design has changed with the series 4 and 5 design, that that now is the time to play with colors. And the iPhone XR especially showed us what Apple can do with at least aluminum casings and colors. And they haven't done that yet. So this could be the very first step of that. And then
it seems kind of obvious that at some point they should just do Apple Watch aluminiums in every color of like the iPhone.
Yeah.
In, like the iPhone 11 comes in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're expecting this to be aluminium, right? This product red one.
Yeah, no, I don't suppose they say, but that we've not seen them do red stainless steel yet. The only colors in stainless steel we've seen so far is space gray, silver, and then midnight green. And they've not done a watch in midnight green yet. So that would be different. So they're pretty far away from that. I would imagine this is just an aluminum version only, as nice as stainless steel would be.
Yeah, I bet it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and I would be very tempted to pick one up.
Like, product red timescales, they often do like the mini refresh in the springtime, like mm-hmm. March, around March. That's when they do the off-cycle iPhones in the special colors and stuff. So, you know, maybe a couple of months we'll see this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a day when they turn the Apple logo red, right? And it's
mm-hmm.
Yeah, when is that? They for World AIDS Day, and that's, well, I suppose that's actually in November, but yeah, they often do this in the spring too. And that's when the iPhone, yeah, like you mentioned, that's when the iPhone would see the, there were two versions before the iPhone had just a red version all year round. There was the iPhone 7, which was the white front with a red back. And then there was the iPhone 8, that was the black front and the red back. And both of those were like spring launches, 6 months after the actual like initial release. So this could be the same thing, but for the watch. Now that red is part of the lineup all the time for the iPhone. Yeah, speaking of the Apple Watch, a couple of things I want to mention before we get into the rest of the news in the show. First is something I promised a few weeks ago, which is that my 9-to-5 Mac Watch Time podcast that I kicked off last summer and intended for it to be seasonal. It took the month of December off, and now I'm committed to doing a full year of every 2 week episodes in 2020. So the first episode is an interview with Gregory McFadden, who is Greg's Gadgets on YouTube, and he's got an awesome story of using the Apple Watch to motivate himself to lose over 100 pounds, and that is just remarkable. And you can hear his story both in his YouTube video that we discussed in the show, and then also, you know, on the podcast. So definitely subscribe to that, because I'll have a new episode out every 2 weeks, and I think some will be like the one of the episodes that I did so far was really, really received well, which was just me for 30 minutes talking. And I plan to do some of those throughout the year too, just to make it possible. So check that out. And then also on the Apple Watchcast podcast, I was a guest on their New Year's Eve episode. And that was a lot of fun. They do video occasionally to mark milestones, and that was one. And so if you've ever wanted a video version of Happy Hour, watch that, and it's the closest thing you'll get for now. there was this story that you had that I thought was pretty neat that you referred to over the break, which was about perks for services for Apple Store employees. So it's kind of an Apple Store bundle, but the bundle deal is that you've got to work at the Apple Store?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the Apple does like various perks for the employees from time to time. I think you mentioned that like they used to do like 1 year of Apple Music free, and then they do other stuff. When the watch was first out, they offered discounts to try and encourage Apple Store employees to actually buy their own watches for themselves, which, mm-hmm. you know, has benefits on the sales experience, because generally when you own a product and you use it every day, then you can sell it better as well to other people. So this seems to be along those lines, but in the services department, starting in January, Apple Store employees will be able to get Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, and Apple Arcade for free. So it's a free bundle of those three. News Plus is not included for who knows why. But, you know, that service is struggling on its own merits anyway.
Yeah.
But this would be for employees only. It would not extend to the family. So if you happen to be a family member of an Apple retail store employee, you're out of luck. It would be for individuals only, so there's no sharing. But it essentially lets them, you know, talk about the services to other people, get on the bandwagon a bit. Very, very much like the Apple Watch discount they did back in 2015, but, you know, it's the services focus.
Yeah, my recollection is a one-time per year 25% discount, and then a once every, like, 3 or 5 years discount of $500 off of a Mac, and then 15% for friends and family, like, at any time, or 10% for, like, anything immediately in the store. So this makes sense. I mean, you almost expect this to have always been the case.
Because obviously hardware, they can do the discounts, like what you said, but services essentially free for them, right? And by limiting it to the personal accounts only, there's no, like, weird sharing going on. Like, if the Apple retail employees had ridiculous discounts on unlimited or hardware purchases, then you'd get a lot more of the kind of, like, subterfuge scumminess of people, like, buying it for everyone they know and, you know, getting it for reselling and all that stuff. But for services, the per user cost to Apple is essentially nothing, and they can limit it and lock it down to one account only, which would be, like, registered to the store or whatever. So it's kind of like zero risk for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think is there an iCloud upgrade to this that was, like, from a long time ago that maybe is still in effect? I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There was at one point they had, like, promotional iCloud for employees, but I don't know if they still have that.
Yeah, it's like you can't expect every employee to pay for every service, and it's like you're deducting what you pay them for your own company. So this is a good thing. Hope it only gets better.
Yeah, and presumably, based on the current reporting, at some point this year, Apple is going to do a media bundle for customers, probably of the same three products. So it lines up.
RIP news. Yeah. our colleague Jordan Kahn had a story over the holiday too that was about a new spec for Apple's MFI made for iPhone program. And the headline he has is Apple introduces specs for photography strobe accessories that augment iPhone 11's flash. And from what I understand, he had the information for a while and was just trying to get something concrete on, like, what will that look like? And kind of the usual suspects weren't really sure. So it was interesting. It was like, there's a new spec, but, like, how will it be used? And that was on the 19th. On the 27th, it was publicly announced that Anker would have an MFI certified LED flash for the iPhone 11. And so it's kind of interesting. It's like, this is happening because of that. And this will be a 2020 product, so it comes out in January. But it's basically, it has a lightning connector that you plug into the phone, and then it's got a long cord, and in the middle of the cord, it kind of spirals so that you can stretch it out longer without it being long to begin with. And then there's a square that has a much bigger flash than you would get from the iPhone. And I suppose you use this, connect it, and then you can, like, manipulate where the flash is relative to the camera. And there's also a dedicated shutter button. So if you were doing, like, a tripod situation, then you could remotely fire this off without using, like, the Apple Watch app or something. So, or a timer.
Is it so, like, you know, like a professional photographer, they time it so the flashes go off as the shutter button's pressed on, you know, the DSLR or whatever in a studio. So presumably that's what's happening here as well, where it fires the flash when you press the shutter button on the software camera app.
Yeah, that makes sense. And some of the benefits that they mentioned, that it's 2 times the range for illuminating objects, and then 4 times as bright as the iPhone 11 and 11 Pro flash. So it's like, you know, if you're doing creative photography and you want to take your pictures to the next level, the iPhone flash gets better every year in small ways, but it's still a built-in flash. And just like with, like, a dedicated camera, if you've got a dedicated flash, it can also be just a whole lot better. So,
yeah, and, like, if you're thinking of the shot on iPhone commercials where they do the videos, like the recent, like, Selena Gomez advert, yes, they are shot on the iPhone, but there's all this other, like, stuff and peripherals and that goes along with it. And this clearly just helps that, because you can imagine, like a setup where the camera's in this frame and then it has this big long wire that shows off to like a big flash in the, mm-hmm. on the other side of the studio. Like the one that we see from Anger is just this little like handheld thing, but you know, the protocol will work on over longer distances, of course, on bigger like static studio sets as well.
Yeah. And like for this specific thing alone, I mean, I can see having fun with the angles. So, you know, if you use the built-in flash, then it requires your flash to be the same place as your camera. But with this, you can do like some off angle pictures where like there creates a shadow from the flash in its own way. And that's to say that you can use it as a dedicated flashlight, just like the built-in flash. But again, it's brighter. It's four times brighter. So, I don't see people using it that way, especially, but, it's recharges. So I don't know that you've got to have it connected to the camera to the phone with the cable, or maybe you do, but it doesn't deliver enough power to work. And so you charge it independently, but they say 10,000 shots per charge, recharge with any, lightning, USB lightning cable. So there's that. So this will exist. Oh, and they also say that it will have a detachable diffuser, so to have different flash effects that way. So that's kind of cool. It's kind of a random thing, and the price for this is $49.99, so it's a reasonable price for something like this. So,
As Apple pushes the iPhone into more pro photography use cases, it makes sense to support accessories like external flashes at a proper level, because I think there were some before that were like Bluetooth, and then mm-hmm. you'd have to use like the manufacturer's app when you take the shot, so it would time having the flash fire.
That's true, yeah. And that's probably the MFI part of this, is that you can use the built-in camera app and have it be recognized. That makes sense,
which is cool. And obviously it kind of ties in with the dedicated camera button on the smart battery case this mm-hmm. year. It'd be kind of cool if they expand MFI to support like other cases can do the same thing with external buttons, or you can have external firing buttons through the lightning port that also line up with the flashes and everything like that. Like there's a big ecosystem they can support there if they want to.
Yeah, I want that shutter button on the iPhone itself so bad that a few nights ago I dreamed that I bought a new iPhone case and it had the button on it, but it was like a third-party case that you just put on. And so I looked under the case and there was no button, and then I realized, oh, this is designed for the next iPhone. It's like, oh man, this is infecting my dreams. I want the button that bad without the battery case.
Hiring these days takes time that you often don't have. Sometimes filling a role is urgent, and filling a role with a quality candidate that is truly meant for your business is hard. So how do you do it? It isn't as simple as putting an ad in the newspaper. This is where LinkedIn Jobs comes in. It's the best place to post your job. Get up and running from the LinkedIn Jobs dashboard. Simply start with your company name, job title, and location. Education and grades are important, but LinkedIn also considers qualities like collaboration, work ethic, and adaptability. LinkedIn Jobs finds people that are not only qualified, but fit in with your company's culture. LinkedIn does the legwork to find the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. It looks beyond just old work skills and connects you with candidates who match your business perfectly. LinkedIn makes sure your job post gets in front of the people that you want to hire. It's no wonder a person is hired every 8 seconds on LinkedIn. Companies rated LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring Happy Hour.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Apple TV Plus. And there was a big report a few weeks ago that we discussed at length here. And the idea was that Apple would have a chance to catch HBO's former leader. And he left the company after AT&T took over and changed strategies, and that he was sort of a free agent, and that there was a possibility of him becoming exclusive to Apple, and that whatever he creates goes to Apple, creates for Apple TV+. Now that's official. So what's happening here?
Yeah, so Richard Pepler, who left HBO at the start of 2019, essentially, and he'd run HBO for like 28 years, so he was a long time, you know, employee there and leader, and he like heralded the company through the incredible growth of HBO with shows like Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And obviously he's good friends with other people in the industry, so he's, you know, on good terms with the Sony execs that Apple also hired. And when HBO started going into, like, his premiership of the studio was essentially turning HBO into the premium brand that, you know, it became with top quality shows. But what kicked him out of the company, essentially, was that HBO's ownership under Warner Media were trying to just move HBO into more of a, like, a, you know, shovelware catch-all environment where they would just take anything. Like, they added Friends and stuff and Big Bang Theory, and they're buying, you know, stuff like that under the HBO Max streaming service that will launch this year. And he obviously wanted to be more boutique and exclusive and, you know, limited set of high quality productions, which, you know, is kind of a match made in heaven for Apple TV Plus, which is essentially that idea, right? Yeah. So when he left in February, there was some speculation about what he was going to do next. He talked about that he didn't want to be a leader anymore. He didn't want to be like a CEO, and he just wanted to, you know, make some cool stuff, but there was nothing like concrete about anything. And then only at the end of last year, essentially, was it, he's close to signing with Apple. And in an interview with the New York Times today, it turned out he'd actually been talking on and off with like Eddie Q and folks since like July or June. It's basically Eddie Q rang him up as soon as he quit HBO and said, look, once all the craziness dies down and you know you want what's next, we'll talk about it. And they've brought him on board into a 5-year deal. He's not actually like an Apple employee. He's running his own production company, and then the production company is exclusively making stuff for Apple TV Plus for 5 years, and then, you know, maybe they'll extend it or whatever down the road. And that would cover TV shows, movies, and documentaries, so the whole gamut. But, you know, his philosophy is very much on the do a few things well versus, you know, bringing loads of stuff in. So you probably only see a couple of, you know, a handful of stuff every single year coming out of his new production company, which will end up on the TV Plus service. It's a big get. Like, we heard about Apple had bid $500 million to get J.J. Abrams' production company, Bad Robot, exclusively, and Abrams turned it down. You know, you have to assume a lot of that $500 million budget then got refunneled into Pepler's pocket for... Because he's like as big a name as Abrams easily. Like, obviously not slightly different field in terms of being the owner of HBO versus just like the older production company stuff. But, you know, like, he was a really respected name in the industry before, you know, years back, before all the TV Plus and original content stuff started spewing up. Apple was partnered with HBO and things like the HBO Now app on the third gen Apple TV, and they were like the heralding that. They Q and him have been long friends for a long time, so it's kind of a match made in heaven. And it sounds like he did like put some feelers out with other companies too, but, you know, he was dead set on Apple from the beginning. So hopefully it will result in some good stuff coming over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Apple TV Plus, what people compare it to is HBO in a lot of ways, because it's not Netflix. It's not, you know, a big catalog of content plus originals. It's just originals, and HBO is, you know, changing the direction now. They literally got what they were being compared to before it changed to the new thing. So this should be pretty good. I mean, there's like no better scenario than this for Apple, and in terms of what they want to do with this ambition. And it just so happened that they managed to get their service they were building for years off the ground at around the same time that his company had new ownership, and he needed to go away. So this should be pretty good. So
yeah, and say what you want about TV Plus's current lineup, they are certainly stacking it with deals with, you know, high profile names like across the board. Like, there's so much in the pipeline now that is, I think, way more than people really think about generally. Like, they have deals with so many people, and including so many big names. I mean, they've got Spielberg both on Amazing Stories and on the War series, which again came from HBO, but HBO didn't want to support it anymore. So, and that one's the Band of Brothers third installment, and that one is actually being produced by Apple's own studio. And like, to get Spielberg to do that was to cost a fortune on its own. Plus they got Pepler, plus they got, you know, Alfonso Cuarón recently. Like, they've got a lot of stuff to even if they haven't, even if they launched out the gate with, you know, a very small lineup, it, within the next, you know, couple of years, it's going to be a pretty massive catalog. And at least all things point to date that they are going to stick to their, you know, all original strategy. So we'll see how it unfolds.
Yep. Have you seen any of the new stuff since the originals ended their seasons?
Yeah, I've watched about half of Servant so far. I think Servant's pretty good. I like the idea of Truth Be Told, but I haven't actually got around to watching it yet.
I haven't started either.
I think January, like, this is definitely a bad month for TV Plus. Like, they're going to have 1-8 episode anthology series come out, and that's going to be it for the entire month. That's pretty weak.
Yeah, yeah, and that their flagships have all ended.
And Seven and Truth Be Told will end this month as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by the end of the month, they'll be done essentially. Maybe one episode spilling over to February, but like, this is the bad peaks of the strategy of doing only original stuff, is you have nothing to fall back on whilst you're building this thing out. Like, all these deals with these huge names have only come into play over the last like year and a half, and you know, TV production takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have more shows in the offing, but they can't drop it all at once, because then they have nothing for 6 months until, you know, November time when the flagship start having their season twos ready or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this is the bad point of scaling up a service with no back catalog, is you end up with these periods of very, very little. And people are kind of saying the same thing about Disney Plus at the moment, where like The Mandalorian's finished now. So, you know, what is there to intrigue people? But at least Disney Plus has 7,000 titles that go back to the 1980s, and whether you want to watch them or not, really, they are there. Whereas TV Plus is like, you know, pretty thin on the ground at the moment.
Yeah, so with Apple TV Plus, I finished all of the original stuff that launched with, and I saw my mom over the holiday, and I was sort of, I think you will like see, because she likes that sort of genre. And I told her, just get use the free trial, because she didn't buy anything new. She doesn't get the free year. And she's not on my family sharing account. So I said, just use the free trial and like watch it all at once if you like it. And then, you know, go from there. But right now it's not the time to recommend someone pay money for it.
Mm-hmm.
If they've already seen the launch shows, it's a good thing it's free right now for people who bought new devices.
Yeah. And like, if you want to pay $5 and watch all the seasons, all the series in a month, and mm-hmm. then cancel it, that's fine. And if you're not getting the 3-year deal, that's probably like the way to go at the moment.
Yes, yeah.
Just because you have space like January at the moment, which is literally going to have one thing in it, unless they, you know, surprise us with some other announcements. It doesn't look like they're going to, since they've already kind of moved on to announcing February content. So
yeah.
Until like the pace of TV Plus doesn't really start picking up to a degree where it'd feel like a standalone service until like the middle of next year, realistically, like mm-hmm. when you have new originals coming out plus the season two renewals and everything of the flagship shows.
That's right. Yep. So that's the TV Plus future. It looks pretty good. There's another development that happened recently, which is, this happened on the eve of New Year's Day. I guess it was
New Year's Eve.
Well, okay, on the evening of New Year's Day, how's that? I'll finish the word. on the evening of New Year's Day, it was the 2nd of January locally for this company when this news was released. What the news is that Apple has created a new deal with Imagination Technologies, and this is the British chip maker who was responsible for the early GPUs inside of Apple's chips. And then in 2017, they had a big public breakup where this came through a Financial Times story where they say, we're going to do our own within 2 years. And Imagination's value as a company just shot down. And then there were sort of back and forths over who was being honest about what was happening behind the scenes. And
yeah, because Apple poached a load of their employees.
Yeah.
Like an office down the road, and
That's
they weren't being best of friends.
That's right. And so then like that was the end of it. Apple had their A11 chip in the iPhone X with their first custom designed GPU, and we thought that was the end of the story. But last night, Imagination Technologies had this very short press release sent out that just said that they are announcing that they replaced the multi-year multi-use license agreement with Apple from 2014 with a new multi-year license agreement under which Apple has access to a wider range of Imagination's intellectual property in exchange for license fees. So nothing specific. They make it sound like it's a bigger deal than it was the first time. But I mean, the whole news here is that it's even that they're back in business together again, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they spent, you know, the last however long developing these custom GPUs, which they claimed they could do without needing licensing from any, you know, from them. And then they've come around and said, hey, we want to license your patents again. Maybe it's exploring into other fields beyond standard GPUs.
Mm.
Imagination had some preview prototype of like a different architecture for GPU stuff a couple of months back. So maybe Apple's interested in that. There's a lot of speculation about what exactly it's for. We don't have anything concrete, really.
And Apple hasn't even acknowledged this as they do sometimes. Like with Qualcomm, they had a joint interest in announcing that. And so they did together. And this one is just Imagination announcing it, and you don't hear anything from Apple.
Yeah, Apple's tried to like shove it under the rug. Yeah. So maybe they came across something where they're like, oh dear, we actually need these patents again, and we'll just pay for it, whatever, move on. Mm-hmm. We have to use our imagination to really know what the reason is here.
And Imagination, I mean, they were forced to put themselves up for sale.
Yeah, they got bought out by some Chinese conglomerate, basically.
Yeah, largely because of the Apple problem, if not entirely because of the Apple problem for them. The company that bought them, they're Silicon Valley based. They're called Canyon Bridge. But yeah, exactly. They're ran by Chinese authorities from reporting about them. So it isn't necessarily the same company. I mean, the same IP is there and the same employees that haven't been poached by Apple already. but there's new management in charge. And so they managed to keep the company alive through 2018 and 19. And then here it is, Apple's a customer again. All I can find in terms of like what's changed especially is this what Imagination calls their IMG A-series GPU. And they claim that it's the fastest GPU IP, so something to license ever.
The thing is, GPU roadmaps are long. Like, if that was, unless Apple had like foreknowledge of it,
yeah, which is possible.
Maybe, but it's not like if they can't just license it today and ship it in the iPhone this year, even next year. Like,
yeah.
Apple's chip development cycle is like 3 years long, if not longer. So. Even if this thing is like changed their head, turned their head, and they're like, "Oh, we want to do stuff with that," you know, buying the license today, you know, won't really have an impact for a while.
Yeah, that's right. And they did. Imagination did say this was in the beginning of December that the first chips that use this IMG A series GPUs they'd be out in 2020. So some people were sold on it before the announcement and have it planned, you know, to be in their chips this year. We don't know if it's Apple.
Yeah, maybe behind the scenes Imagination was like showing Apple like, yeah, here's what's coming down the pipeline, trying to get them back on side, and then they finally, you know, agree to do it or something. So yeah,
and they've got a bunch of other
basically
clients.
We won't know until products come out with different GPU designs, and then someone will do a breakdown and work out if there's actually like Imagination cores in there.
Yeah, and something I wondered was could you know, if Apple's found their rhythm with their own GPUs in iPhones and iPads, could it be, I guess, a couple of things. Could it be a factor for Mac GPUs when if Macs shift to ARM CPUs? And then also, could it be relevant to the AR headset? But in any scenario, you just imagine that Apple can roll their own thing unless...
I mean, you have to assume that especially for the AR stuff, like that Apple graphics thing must have been an event for years already,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah. And that if it runs in the iPhone or the iPad, that those things are highly capable. They're not, you know, the baby versions of GPUs. So
yeah, I mean,
it's curious.
At a high level, Apple doesn't hold grudges. So if there is technology that they want, they'll get back into bed with whoever, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't too messy, although there were back and forth disputes.
Yeah, I mean, like, Apple has this public image of being, you know, all righteous, but if you actually get into the nitty-gritty of some of the deals they do, they definitely don't act don't act in perfect moral standing. Like,
well, I mean, basically... and through all of their qualms with Samsung, they never stopped being a Samsung customer.
Yeah, yeah, and in this imagination arrangement, they knew what they were doing when they announced what they did. Like, they screwed imagination to the floor, basically. They took all the employees that had a pessimistic outlook at their current company with a, you know, office building down the road, within very close proximity, and then imagination had to sell itself to some Chinese company just to survive. Like, you know, Apple will be ruthless when they need to be. Like, so and then it turns out, oh, there's some technology they need again. Oh, here's some money. We'll get, you know, we'll come back together. Like, they're just they're very binary in that way. It's stupid for a big company to hold like a, you know, sentimental reason, really. Like, even with Qualcomm, like, they, you know, they battled out with Qualcomm for years, and now when it suited them and they needed it, they got, you know, they made a deal and they just carry on with their lives. Like, that's the reality of big business.
That's right. That's right. Let's talk about some new stuff coming this year. So over the holiday, we had, I guess, two renders based on sort of what some people are hearing about what iPads and iPhones will look like this year. Let's start off with the iPad. So what's changed with the iPad from what we can tell this year? Again, remember that there's no 2019 iPad, that the iPads we have now are from 2018. They're awesome, but there seems to be an iPad coming sometime this year, and now we've got an idea of what it could look like.
Yeah, so we've heard about the triple camera system coming to the iPad Pro lineup for a little while now, and now we have renders via the quite reliable Steve McFly, who's also known as OnLeaks, and he was the one who like leaked the iPhone 11 camera design all the way back in January of last year, and many other products before that, including the 2018 iPad Pro redesign. So he has pretty good sources, and you know, his jam is he partners with this website that make renders based on supposed like schematic leaks that, and he has a very high record of accuracy, and what we see depicted is an iPad Pro that looks mostly the same as the current ones, but there is now the bigger triple camera system, sort of a la what the iPhone has, although we're kind of expecting that one of the cameras might, rather than being like a zoom lens, it might be for a time of flight sensor, so it might actually look a little bit different in the final incarnation. And then the other thing that's interesting is that whilst the 11-inch iPad Pro has the metal back, it kind of looks like the 12.9-inch iPad Pro is going to move to a glass panel, and that would be the first iPad to have a glass a glass casing. And we know how much iPhones smash, and having one massive big glass back for the iPad seems dangerous. Although I guess you could say that, you know, it has a massive glass panel on the front for the screen. True. So is the back any different? But this would be like the first time they're doing a glass panel on the back of the phone. One idea I had about this is that we'd kind of heard that maybe the iPad Pro line will get 5G before the iPhones would, mm-hmm, later in the year. Mm-hmm. And that's not completely unprecedented, because the iPad 4 did LTE before the iPhones did. And maybe here the moving to glass is better for the antennas, right?
Yeah, because
because metal is not conducive to the airwaves,
and the current iPad Pros that have cellular with LTE, the antenna design is all over the casing right now. So it's they're kind of pushing what they can do with that casing. So it's possible.
Yeah, you have like the lines going everywhere.
So yes,
maybe to get the higher power and the data rates and the bandwidth of 5G, they're having to switch to glass backs, which are radio transparent all the way across. And you can get a much nicer look, and also, you know, get the radio output that we need. And you wouldn't necessarily need to see the same drastic changes to the iPhone to get 5G, because the iPhone's already glass backed.
Mm.
So that's my, you know, mostly speculative theory on why the iPad Pro would get a glass back. And that does kind of support why it would only be on the 12.9-inch model, because that'd be the most expensive. And so they'd do it's like, you know, 5G super premium on the really expensive.
Maybe the 12.9-inch iPad Pro with the glass back could work with AirPower.
Oh.
So you need a glass back for wireless charging.
We're in 2020 now. We can't bring up AirPower again.
It took me 2 days.
what do you think? Would you be wary about a glass-backed iPad in your household?
I mean, yeah, I would be before you made the good point that the front is glass too. So,
Do you leave all your iPads in cases?
I don't use like a case per se. The best way I like to use my iPad, because I don't use it like a Mac replacement, I use my MacBook Pro for that. I like to just use it like just the iPad, nothing around it. And it feels so good. And it feels like so thin and just massive that way in a good way. And that's only if it's like at my desk. If I put it in my backpack or take it anywhere, then I put it in the Folio Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This Smart Cover Folio. So not the keyboard version, which I do have, but since I've got the MacBook Pro, I don't use that so much. I just have it in the Folio, which is even thinner. And that way the back and the front are protected, except for the camera cutout. But, it attaches magnetically. It doesn't make it much thicker. And it just, and you can flip the cover backwards. So that's what I use. I don't use like a case at all. It's just the, it does cover the front and back when it's in a backpack. So that's just to keep scratches off of it.
Yeah, I do use a case on my iPad Pro. So I guess, and that does actually wrap all the way around. Like, it's not just like a front cover. So I guess the actual case material doesn't matter as much because it's going to be covered up anyway. So, and I think you're probably the exception. Like, most people probably have their iPads in cases.
I guess.
Especially with all the keyboard cases being so popular nowadays as well.
Like, yeah, it's true. That's true. I have my kids' iPads.
Maybe it doesn't matter. But yeah, it would be the first time that they've done a glass iPad on front and back.
Yeah, my kids have an iPad case with a handle, and then it's also a stand. And then they've got an iPad case made from OtterBox. It's like if you imagine the iPhone clear case, but for the iPad, it's that. So, that makes sense.
You.
Yep. Bring on the glass iPads. What about the iPhone?
How many times have we talked about the iPhone 12 at this point? There was this shaky rumor that Apple is preparing the highest end iPhone this year that will be like full screen display, i.e. no notch, and drop Face ID, instead just have underscreen Touch ID. The sourcing on that one was not good enough for me to really put too much weight behind it. Like, the canonical reference for iPhone rumors has to be Ming-Chi Kuo, and we've seen what his lineup says for this year. You have four OLED iPhones, and they all still have Face ID, and they all still have notches. So it's, you're going to need some compelling evidence to make me sway from that kind of like status quo of rumor mill. What is probably true is a report from DigiTimes that the A14 chip is going to production in the second quarter of the year, because that's the year that they always do it. And this year it will be on a 5-nanometer process. So the A12 and the A13 used 7-nanometer, and Apple made a big deal for the iPhone XS when they were talking about, oh, it's the first 7-nanometer chip in the world, blah, 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 super fast. And it looks they're likely to be able to do it again this fall with the 5-nanometer A14 chip in the 2020 iPhones. And feature size is kind of like a marketing term more than strictly scientific. So I wouldn't, Intel's version of measurements for nanometers isn't directly comparable to what like TSMC will tout. So, 5 versus 7, those like specific numbers probably aren't as relevant, but the important point is that 5 is smaller than 7.
And if you've got the same power in a smaller chip, it can be more power efficient, battery efficient, right?
Yeah, unless or faster.
Right, because it's shorter distance to travel.
Yeah, basically it gets less hot, so the chip can run, more powerful, and you can fit more transistors in the same space, which allows the logic gates to work faster, and then you get a faster chip.
Mm-hmm.
And so and obviously Apple's already leading the industry on smartphone performance, so more of the same.
Right. No stagnation.
Yeah, indeed. We'll be interested to see whether they do like an architecture switch up in terms of like the layout of the boards, because obviously we've had the Bionic design for several generations now, so they could just do the A14, which kind of looks like the A13, but now it's on a smaller process, and just use the inherent gains from that, or they could do something more dramatic and, probably give it a different branding name as well, but you know, TSMC reporting isn't going to be able to tell us that. So
yeah, so we've had Fusion, Bionic, and Bionic as long as they've been naming these things. So is it another Bionic year or is it a new name? We'll see. And then the look of the iPhone, we've heard what that could look like in terms of the sides and everything, but now we've got a pretty render.
Yeah, so it's not quite to the provenance level of like an Unleaks render, but Makatakara got their hands on a what looks like it's supposedly from iPhone prototypes in the factories, and it's been printed out in like a 3D print. And obviously, we've heard of like the idea that the iPhone's going to go look more like the iPhone 4 this year with flat sides. And what you see in this mock-up, if you want to call it that, is very much that. The case looks a lot like the current phones. You've got the notch at the top. You've got the same kind of size bezels and the curved screen. But if you twist it on its side, rather than it curving, it's like a flat. It's just completely flat on the side. So the side buttons aren't on a curve. They're just flat edges.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool. I think this is definitely one of the things that this is probably like the most obvious interpretation of all the rumors we've heard so far, right? Like, just take the current iPhones we know them today, and instead of having a tapered edge, just go straight down with this, a direct cut. If you're expecting something more dramatic, maybe this is disappointing, but we can't, I wouldn't nail your fingers down on the basis of this, right? Because someone could have just, it could have just been made by enthusiasts and sold in Alibaba, and then people have bought it, right?
Like, that's true, yeah.
We don't know. We need a few more morsels to come out, and like if it was from OnLeaks, then it'd be a different story. But because it's just kind of come off like an Alibaba website, anyone can sell stuff on Alibaba if they really want to,
right?
And it's probably not that difficult to take the old CAD for the iPhone 11 and then just go to the side bit and then straighten it off, if you know what I mean. So this is definitely like a good look at what the current rumors kind of support, because Kuo's been talking about an iPhone 4 look. He hasn't necessarily been talking about a major redesign for everything. And he definitely isn't saying like the notch is going away and stuff. So, there are only so many ways you can slice a screen, right? That isn't folding. Uh-huh. So this is probably along the right lines. So, but we'll have to like wait for some more supporting evidence to really like say this is it. And if you're just interested in the timelines, the iPhone 11 Pro camera system with the square nut, the square hole and the three triangular arrangement was leaked by OnLeaks on the 6th of January.
That can't be real though. It's got to be a fake.
Yeah, that's got to be a fake, right?
Yeah. It's
funny when we do that every single year in the comment, the first round of comments are just everyone doesn't believe it. And then, 9 months later, it's completely accurate. But the clock's ticking on leaks if you want to beat last year's record.
Yeah. You think, is McFly his real last name? Is that a real last name?
I had no idea. But
okay. I just want to put that up. I like him.
People can. I have no aspersions over what people want to be called.
That's
so
true. I was just curious, like if it's like a birth name or not.
It might be a pseudonym or something.
Yeah, he does good work though.
Yeah.
Yep. And it seems like this year is going to be for a long time it was that 5G would be coming by 2021 with the help of Intel, and then that was because Apple was feuding with Qualcomm. And while Qualcomm was supplying 5G to Android phones, Apple wasn't having it. They were suing them instead, and that they wanted to roll their own cellular chips. And then it turns out that Intel's chip business for cellular wasn't that great. It was taking longer than they wanted to bring that to market. And
they basically had no customers apart from the iPhone.
Yeah, Apple was their customer, and they weren't shipping yet, so it was bad. So when they settled with Qualcomm, then it was just kind of game over for Intel for that part of their business. And so now, once they've settled with Qualcomm and they're okay working together again, then it seems like 2020 will be the year of 5G in the iPhone, which like you mentioned, could follow 5G in the iPad, which would be kind of a neat test bed before it comes to the iPhone. But that's my thinking on this, based on everything we've seen, is that this is the year that the iPhone picks up 5G, that it would not have been bad to have it last year because people buy iPhones for more than 1 year. And we're starting to see in the US more and more markets all the time from real carriers offer 5G, like a real 5G. And so I think like 2020, this is the Apple needs to have 5G this year, that even if there's not a massive benefit yet, it's something that you want to have in your phone for it to be capable. And then, you know, we'll go from there. But, you know, I don't think consumers have to know specifically, like, what is the benefit? It's one of those important selling points, and there are benefits to it. But this seems about right, right? This year is the 5G year since what happened last year.
Yeah, like, Apple obviously has done, you know, long-term calculations. I think there's some, in one of the Qualcomm lawsuits, there was discussions about Apple planning the 5G adoption of the iPhones as early as like 2014 or something, you know, insane. Like, these things have incredibly long timelines, and they obviously had a date in their head of when they wanted a 5G iPhone to come out, and they thought they could do it through Intel, and then it didn't happen, and the project was wrong, so then they had to settle with Qualcomm. And if the Intel situation had been better, they wouldn't have settled with Qualcomm. They'd have taken it to court like they originally intended. So they have the data in their head. They know when they need to make the deals by to be able to get the phones out the door with 5G by the date they wanted to. And clearly, they wanted it for the holidays of 2020. And, you know, based on the market, that seems about right. Like, last September, yes, it would have been nice if they did have 5G models, but there isn't massive 5G adoption in the real world yet. And the competition around Android in terms of 5G options was also pretty slim on the ground. Like, they did have 5G models, but they weren't like, there. It was basically most of the Android manufacturers at the moment have the normal phones and then the 5G option, which is like $100 more or whatever, mm-hmm, right? Like, yeah. And I think what we're going to see across 2020 is, rather than there being like the add-on upgrade to get 5G, that will just start filtering down as being like the default lineup. So when it comes time for the iPhones in September, at that point, you know, Apple needs the 5G in at least some of the models. And it sounds like they're going to have 5G radios in the 6.1-inch and the 6.7-inch. So they're going to get it in more than one. Like, it's not just going to be the highest-end model. It's going to be pretty spread out across the lineup. So I think they've kind of timed it correctly. And obviously, the one that they ship this year will just basically be using a Qualcomm off-the-shelf modem, mm-hmm, and so they can get it out the door. But then behind the scenes, they're working to make their own modem still. And then at some point, they'll be able to say bye-bye Qualcomm and then ship their own modems exclusively inside the phone.
And then regroup up with Qualcomm a few years later. Imagination style.
Yeah, well, like that has real benefits to them for power usage, because right now, You have the SoC, the system on the chip, like the A13 and the A14, and then you have a separate chip on the board, which is the modem. And once they can actually get a 5G modem custom in-house, they can just have that on the SoC itself, which is big boost for power efficiency. So there are real like gains for them doing that. It's not just a like, we don't want to use Qualcomm's technology, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there is actually like technical reasons why they want to go in that direction. But the latest reports on that seems like it's going to be like a 2022, 2023 kind of timeframe thing. So for the intervening 3 years, that's where they sign the Qualcomm deal and we'll get Qualcomm chips.
Yep. Do you think, so we feel like the iPad and the iPhone go 5G. What do you think about the watch? Is there a benefit there that could be had?
I think the watch is still struggling to get like proper 4G service. So I mean, eventually, sure, but I think it'll be a while. Yeah. I mean, literally, we see situations where it doesn't even use the 4G. It can't get strong enough connections to the 4G radios. So, like, that's surely got to be step one, right, before they start leaping off into the 5G world.
I wondered if you know, obviously, you've got to continue including 4G radios, but I wonder if by going to 5G that you could get a better performance there than you would have with struggling 4G. But I don't know. It's not a problem for the iPhone, so they get to graduate to 5G. So it's a curious thing with the watch that you know.
Also, the data rate, like, one of the biggest reason why people are talking about 5G adoption and interest is, you get much faster speeds and lower latency, right? Mm. At least that's what's being promised. We still have to kind of wait and see until the millions and millions of devices come on the network, and then we'll see what the real world, you know, results are. But that's the idea. And then you look at the watch, it's hard to imagine use cases which would really benefit from super fast cellular or you know, super low latency cellular, like getting messages, getting texts, even like chatting over FaceTime.
If it could make Siri more responsive on cellular, that's a big pain point. Like, seriously? And, you know,
But that's kind of like, I don't think that's being bottlenecked by the network, right? Like, there's something else going on there. I don't think it's we have to have 5G to be able to make that responsive, because you can look at what's happening on the iPhone and it's a completely different story, right? Like, sending texts, doing FaceTime audio calls, those things do not require high bandwidth, low latency connections. They just need service that's sustainable. And so I think they can do it on 4G, and there's nothing in my head that's like, oh, the watch would be so much more enabled by a 5G connection. So obviously they'll get to it eventually, but it can't be a priority.
Yeah. So we'll see what goes on there. This is just a thing, like, because people ask for it, that if you're buying a new phone, then it seems like, you know, if you buy your new phone every, you know, 3 years, then this would be the one to wait for, because you'll get to take advantage of this, especially if the plans change and that you don't have a choice to for 5G access. It's like your plan just becomes a 5G plan for the same price, then you're paying for that service and you don't get to use it if you don't have the device. So I'm very curious about it, even if it's not something that means a lot to me. I think at large, it is becoming important this year, and we've seen reports so far that you know, analysts think it's going to be a big upgrade decision for people, and regardless of what does it mean for you to have 5G. I mean, I think back on the go from I didn't really deal with 2G on an iPhone, but the go from 3G to LTE, and I don't know. I guess it's small what changes generation over generation, but it doesn't hurt. And maybe it is. I guess it is true that you couldn't do some of the higher end video streaming over 3G without in the same speed as you could on 4G. So I'll just see some more.
I mean, one of the motivating factors they had for the iPhone 5 getting 4G was FaceTime calls over cellular, right? Because they promised that before and they never did it, and then they did it when the 4G iPhone came out.
Yeah, that's true. Although,
about like 5G being fantastic and going to change the world, like in the UK, in the rural parts of the UK, I still drop down to 3G at times. Like, you know, we haven't nailed the 4G rollout completely. So yeah. I'm not pessimistic, but you know, anything related to cellular network, it always takes forever. That's always generally my approach.
Yeah, well, you'll get that new something we haven't mentioned is that Apple seems to have nailed their Apple Maps rollout by the end of the year in the U.S., which didn't seem like they were going to do. But like one of the last days of the year, they just kind of flipped the switch, and then all of a sudden,
didn't it get reverted?
Did it?
I thought it did.
Like, check what I see right now and tell, because I was in a situation where across the state line into Alabama, it was the old map, and most of my trips would go through Alabama, and so it was like my local was good, but my we're still good from what I can tell. It's beautiful.
Okay, I saw some people saying it'd been turned off, so maybe they're still rolling out or something. But yeah, they're obviously close to doing it.
The only thing I don't see are where people don't live, but it seems to reflect pretty well for. You know, you can just glance at it and tell what new map is versus old map. Yeah. I'm seeing swimming pools and baseball fields and things across the state. So
yeah, and they said additional countries in 2020. So fingers crossed that includes Britain.
That's right. So have they been driving the cars around where you live?
Have been driving the cars.
Okay, yeah.
But they drive cars around a lot of countries because they collect all this data and then they never necessarily use it. Right? Or they just use it for like if someone reports a problem, then they go and look up the information and like verify it, right? Yeah. So, you know, having the cars drive around is a good sign, but
they definitive.
Drive cars around like 20 different countries, and the pace of the new map rollout is definitely not on the scale of multiple countries a year. I think we're going to see like 3. So, you know, probably the UK will be in there, but they haven't said for sure.
Yeah. I am in an area where we have stop signs and stoplights now.
Ooh.
On the map, which is really cool, but it's especially useful when you're using Siri for navigation, because then instead of saying turn 800 feet ahead, it's turn at the stop sign, and it's just so much more human and helpful. So, maps, yay. I was going from there because I was wondering what will come first to you, 5G or new Apple Maps. So it's a race now.
We have 5G in one city, I think, at the moment.
I think you got 5G in a bunch of areas in the UK that you don't know about, but where you live, you don't. And so we'll see. We'll see.
I think it's kind of like the US situation where even in the cities where they have 5G, you have to be on like the right street corner to actually get it. Like,
yeah. It's
very early days.
Yeah, it's very specific to where they go. Yep. All right, well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZack. That's APolloZac. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And if you enjoy the podcast, you can subscribe at 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour in Apple Podcasts or Overcast or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you really enjoy the show, please give us a rating or a recommendation in any of those platforms. We really appreciate that. And if you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.